Well, hello, everybody. This is Rabbi Dan Levin, and this is Essential Questions. Slavery is a condition that robs you of intention. You have no freedom to set the course for your life's journey, and each and every moment of every day is determined not by you, but for you. You are like a machine that operates as programmed. You do what you're told. But freedom is a different story. Freedom is all about intention. Where should we go? What should we do? And who we are is fundamentally a choice. Too often we set our lives on autopilot. We allow others to program our lives, often from the moment we awaken in the morning to the moment we lie down in the evening. Or we live with no intention. We allow the technological marvels that we enjoy to impose on our life to numb our minds and consciousness with static stimulation to while away the hours. And then Passover arrives, and if we choose, we can let the holiday pose to us an extraordinary question of accountability. You've been enslaved, forced to carry burdens you did not choose, to live a life that you did not chart for yourself, but now, here we are, amazingly free. Our lives lie before us. Can we be deliberate in choosing our next path? Can we exercise intention? Can we apply our values and principles? Can we cultivate the wisdom to know what to do? Can we discern what will bring us the greatest meaning or sense of purpose and fulfillment? Can we listen to the call to be generous, selfless, or to serve? And can we seek out the courage, maybe, to try a new path? If we're going to live with intention, Rabbi Deborah Robbins suggests that we should create for ourselves rituals, structures of practice, that we should carve out time to think and to ponder and to reflect. We are a people who believes that real learning comes from dialogue, and that dialogue we conduct is not only with each other, but with those whose voices call to us from the words they wrote, from the texts that we have carried with us in our wanderings through history. And so today we have the extraordinary privilege of enjoying a dialogue with Rabbi Deborah Robbins. Rabbi Robbins has served Temple Emmanuel in Dallas, Texas since 1991 and is currently deeply invested in efforts to shine the light on emotional and spiritual well-being for her congregation and those that she teaches and touches. Rabbi Robbins is the author of a new book called New Each Day, A Spiritual Practice for Reading Psalms. And in 2019, she published her first book, Opening Your Heart with Psalm 27, A Spiritual Practice for the Jewish New Year. And outside of Temple, Rabbi Robbins serves on the board of Jewish Family Service of Greater Dallas and Family Gateway, and was a member of the City of Dallas Ethics Reform Task Force. Deborah, it is so great to have you with us just a few days before Passover. And was glad to know that other people will be hosting you for Seder, so you only have to cook a few cookies to get ready.
Thanks, Dan. It's wonderful to be here, and I'm grateful to you and the congregation and Rabbi Rabishoff for inviting me to participate.
So in your wonderful new book, and I encourage everybody to go grab a copy, there is in the book this great poem that you draw on by Israeli poet Leah Goldberg. And I want to share that poem because it's a beautiful poem, but I think it speaks a little bit to what we're trying to do as we get ready for Passover and try to build the spiritual component of our lives. And I'll read the translation. It says, "Teach me, O God, a blessing, a prayer, on the mystery of a withered leaf, on ripened fruit so fair, on the freedom to see, to sense, to breathe, to know, to hope, to despair. Teach my lips a blessing, a hymn of praise, as each morning and night you renew your days, lest my day today be as the one before, lest routine set my ways." And you draw on that poem because in some ways there is, I think, comfort in the familiar. I know that when I go to services, if we use a new melody or we do something a little different, we're going to hear about it, right? There's something about that familiarity. But at the same time, right, there is something about a little zets about breaking up routine. So tell us a little bit about how you came to your own prayer practice. And especially as you work mostly with modern Jews for whom regular prayer practice may seem a very foreign or an uncommon imposition.
I love that poem too, and it really informed so much of the work in the book. This idea that each day we could have our routine, but that the routine could also be new. And so I'm glad you resonate with it too. I hope you're our listeners are familiar with it a little bit. It's in Mishkan Tefillah. It's in our Shabbat prayer book for our movement. And maybe you've even heard the beautiful, beautiful setting of it by Cantor Benji Allen Schiller. It just sort of stays in your head. But it very much speaks to the kind of prayer practice that I've developed over the years, which is a little bit unusual. I love Shabbat prayer, and I participate weekly in Shabbat prayer in the congregation, whether I'm leading or not leading in that particular night, but there in the congregation. And so that's very meaningful to me, and I really resonate with sort of the fixed prayers of the prayer book that we may sing in different melodies, or the light may be different in the space, the people in the room are different, whatever the theme of the season or the time of the year may be really informs it. But in terms of my personal practice, it's less based on traditional prayer and more based on study, which can be a form of prayer as well. I was very fortunate to begin work with the Institute for Jewish Spirituality about 15 years ago and really learned how to break apart a verse of Torah or a phrase in liturgy and look at one little piece and use it as a, I don't know, sort of like a mantra, as something to focus on, as something to unpack, and how it could speak to my life and how I could learn to literally sit still with it for a little while, and how to begin to embody it as well with movement or yoga, and sort of the combination of those things of meditation and mindfulness and physical practice. I do a lot of walking. I don't walk with my phone or any music. I'm just out there with the dog and the sun rising, and all grounded in text really informs my personal practice.
So I can resonate because I also had the blessing of studying with the Institute for Jewish Spirituality. It was really a transformative several years of learning with them. I continue to do that. But I'm guessing you didn't grow up doing that.
Oh, no. No way.
Tell us, you know, when I think about kind of how I got into a more regular prayer practice, there were sort of episodes of times when I was more diligent and times when I was less diligent. When I was in college and I was really getting immersed in traditional Jewish practice for the first time, I was laying tefillin and davening every day. And then when I was in rabbinical school, it was also a daily practice because it was built into my day. I didn't have to think about it, right? I knew when I got to school, I did this, and then I went to services, and then I did this. It was like part of my schedule. I didn't have to think about it. And then when I got out into like the real world, even though I was a rabbi, daily prayer practice was not easy, and I kind of fell away from it a little bit. And then 16 years ago, when my father died, I made it my obligation to go say Kaddish for him every day. And so I reinstituted a daily prayer practice, which is where I became again reintroduced to the subject of your book, which is the Psalm of the Day. But tell us a little bit maybe how you got into a regular prayer practice. And I think people sometimes assume, oh, well, rabbis just spend all day praying all day long, right? And that's not our normal lived experience. And I can imagine maybe it wasn't before you went to the rabbinate. So maybe tell us a little bit about how your own prayer journey evolved.
Yeah, I grew up in a Reform congregation. I grew up at Temple Israel in Boston. And so we were regular Shabbat dinner participants. We were family service participants. I was very involved in NFTI and the local region of NFTI and did a lot of creative services. That sort of was very big in the early 80s. And I guess I really learned about the structure of the service then and the idea that you could bring outside sources to interpret prayer and that there were different ways to access holiness, the divine, to pray that could come from anywhere you were. I think it's there that I was really introduced to outdoor prayer and how powerful that could be. I don't know what a lot of people call sort of camp style prayer, but anything with guitar and instruments. The synagogue was big, had a choir, an organ, that whole was very formal. So that sort of more informal style really informed my growing up years. And then I would say my current practice was developed through the work I did with Cantor Richard Cohn when he was here in Dallas. And we started reading the Psalm, Psalm 27 on Shabbat. And Richard and I started talking about it, and I started reading it each day. As Psalm 27 is traditionally read from the start of Elul, the month before Rosh Hashanah, all the way through Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Every day the same Psalm, 14 verses. I just started reading it and journaling on it and creating this quiet time, this very specific routine, all on my own, and discovered after a while I was writing some things that were actually useful in Shabbat services, and I would share something. People say, oh, who wrote that? And I thinking it was somebody else. And I said, oh, I wrote it. And all of a sudden there were enough of them. And people said, well, you really should do something with them. And so that's how the first book came to be. And by then, this, what Leah Goldberg calls routine became a ritual, which I think they're sort of similar words. I think we think about ritual as being a little bit more religious, but it had become my practice to spend time each morning reading a psalm, writing about it, sitting in reflection, and moving on with the day. And people really resonated with the practice when I tried it in some of my classes, and that encouraged me to write the first book and then to go on to the second book. And now it's my prayer practice. And I try to add new things to it all the time.
And I think, for people who don't think about a prayer practice as something as in their normal routine, they can think of other things they establish in a routine because it's good for you. So, a few days a week, I make it my business to go work out. And I create, in some ways, a structure, a ritual that on these days at this hour, I go work out in this place and I do this routine. Sometimes you need a guide to be there with you. So you have a trainer who says, okay, for this time that we're together, you're going to do this and you're going to do this and you're going to do this. We do it because it's healthy, because doesn't always feel healthy in the moment, but we like the result. We like the fact that we feel more alive. We like the fact that we're stronger. We like the fact that when we go to the doctor, our numbers are better because we want to live better. And I think that we are not always as diligent about creating the same structures around our spiritual and our emotional lives. And to say, we need to create a practice, a discipline that says, I'm going to carve out this little bit of time because it's a priority. And I think that if we can learn to do that, we may be amazed at the sense of equanimity or intention. Or as I think one of the greatest things I was taught with the Institute for Jewish Spirituality, a greater sense of awareness of who I am and how I'm spending my time and who I choose to be in all the different roles and ways in which I live. As you taught, somewhere around the second or third century, Jewish tradition added this thing called the Shir Shel Yom, the Psalm of the Day, which is kind of like a capstone to the morning service.
Yes.
It's sort of sandwiched at the end between two recitations of the mourner's Kaddish. What is it about this little chunk of prayer? It's if you're going to write about prayer, you could write about the Shema, you could write about the Tefillah, you could write about the Pesukei Dezimra, the introductory psalms that we read. But it's interesting because you focused your attention on this sort of little piece that's at the end of the service, where in a traditional prayer service, people are already packing up to leave by the time they get to this piece. What was it about these seven psalms that captured your interest?
I didn't know about these psalms for a very, very long time. I'm sure I learned about them in rabbinic school, but it was never part of my practice. But having worked so deeply with Psalm 27, when I realized that these were accessible and these were a possibility, I thought, oh, more psalms are what people need in the world today, because the psalms capture such a vast array of human emotion and experience that we can read seven psalms over and over and over again and they're going to be different to us each day that we read them. And so it was a very manageable group of poems to be able to sit with, as opposed to all 150 of the Psalms. And they're particularly beautiful. And people ask me this question all the time, you know, would I pick these as the seven? And probably not. But what resonates to me about these particular seven is that they have been read by Jews daily for close to 2,000 years. And that even if they might not be our favorites, we sort of follow in that tradition. And that's very compelling to me. I think that the Psalms do hold together as a unit. I think they speak to each other. They share a lot of common vocabulary that gets introduced on Sunday and then plays out over the week. And they also, I think, in terms of the content and the length of them, they set us up. They're moving us always through the week towards Shabbat. So I think they play that really important grounding feature for us in our lives that, you know, the Wednesday Psalm, we're recording this on a Wednesday, is a really, really tough one. But by Wednesday, we can sort of hold that. We're in the middle of the week and we can take on these big challenges. And then the Friday Psalm, super short because we're getting ready for a whole host of Psalms as soon as Shabbat begins with Kabbalat Shabbat. So I think they really move us through time each week.
So thinking about that, you know, you write that there is something nice about this routine. As you wrote in the book, it's always Psalm 24 on Sunday and 48 on Monday, 82 on Tuesday, 94 on Wednesday, 81 on Thursday, and 93 on Friday. And then the week culminates with Shabbat, the Psalm for Shabbat, Psalm 92. Most of the people who are listening don't know any of these Psalms. These are not poems that, you know, we think about the Psalms we know, like Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, right? We know Psalm 121, Esa Einai El HaHarim, right? I lift my eyes to the mountains, where does my help come from? Because I know some of these are more familiar maybe from the regular liturgy. These are in some ways not quite esoteric, but they're not sort of part of our normal routine. So what does it do to sort of push on yourself a piece of text that's sort of unfamiliar?
I think that when we push on these texts that we didn't know so well before, we have to think a little bit harder, which is really good. It doesn't let us be lazy and just sort of go with the familiar and go on autopilot. I think that because they are so rich in emotion and imagery, that we can sit with them over and over again. We don't get bored of them. There's a lot to unpack, and you can come back to it week after week after week, and they really work in that way. And I think if we're sitting with them, then all of a sudden they become as familiar as the others. And what's interesting to me about them as well is that they speak to a lot of other texts that we are familiar with. And I realized this in talking with Rabbi Rabishah about how to organize them maybe for being related to the Omer period, is that there are references in them to the parting of the sea. There are references in them to standing at Mount Sinai. There are references to Adam and Eve. There are references to Jonah, things that are familiar to us and that they start to rise to the surface when we sit with these Psalms long enough over a period of time. Not just like sitting with one for an hour.
When we look at the themes that they express, they're really deeply human themes that really kind of speak to what is our experience. So one of them, the Psalm for Thursday, Psalm 81, kind of talks a bit about sort of moving through the challenges of a busy week or a burdened life. And there is this one phrase in that psalm that you focus on where it says, I removed his shoulder from the burden. God's hands were transferred from the weighty basket. His hands, I should say, were transferred. There's this idea that, you know, we're all kind of carrying a lot, right? And that it gets tiring and that it's burdensome. You, in your beautiful book, sort of draw on some passages from each of these psalms and then share your own poetry It's almost like a poetry dialogue. You know, the psalmist from yesteryear, centuries ago, shares their poetry, and you, in response, are sharing your modern poetry, and blending the two is so rich. Would you share with us that beautiful poem that you wrote about carrying burdens?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's one of my favorites, and it's one that once I considered this idea, it sort of flowed out very quickly and easily. It required sometimes you just write something and it's just born full blown. But I do want to give credit in name of the person who said it, B'Shem Omro, to our teacher, Rabbi Richard Levy of blessed memory, who introduced this idea in his beautiful commentary to the Psalms, of that it could have been the other way, but that God lifts the shoulder, that the burden remains, and that we remove the shoulder. So sure, I'd be happy to read it. This is on page 54 of New Each Day. It's a reflection for focus for Thursday on Psalm 81:7. The verse from Psalms is, "I removed his shoulder from the burden. His hands were transferred from the weighty basket. Weight off my shoulders." It's such a weight off my shoulders. We say it all the time. When we finished a big project, met a massive responsibility, made a difficult choice, let nature take its course. We say it because of the sevel, the oppression, the burden, the weight, the load, physical, emotional, spiritual, of life. We feel our shoulder muscles, the ones that knit themselves to our necks, causing our chins to drop and our heads to hang, tighten. Our shoulder blades compress rather than spread wide like angel wings. Our shoulders hunch up and our backs bend under the burden of sevel. But then, sometimes, we finish something. The sevel is shed like a snake's skin, left behind like flotsam on a seashore, and we move on. We focus on the weight we carry on our shoulders, but not the psalmist and not God. The psalmist writes that God says, "I removed his shoulder from the burden," not, "I removed the burden from the shoulder." The focus is different. The person is changed and the weight remains. Sevel. Labor, decisions, dilemmas, challenges of leadership, of learning, of life, endures. We will return to our loads again and again, tomorrow or next Thursday or after Shabbat. But our shoulders can't bear the constant weight, cauldrons, baskets, buckets, physical or metaphorical. The burdens of the world are constants, but our shoulders must rest. A reminder on a Thursday that Shabbat is coming. A reminder built into the structure of the universe, our world and our lives. We need a time of rest. With our ego's need to be loved and fed constantly, we resist. But God insists. And so do we, even if not of our own accord. The weight will be lifted. I will return, strong, refreshed, ready to take up the load, to hear God's voice, to raise my voice in song. I'm so glad you asked me to read that one. I am excited to read it going into Passover this week. You know, each time you read it, it's in a different context. So the Thursday before Pesach, and this idea about talking about the load and being freed from it, all I can think about are those ancient, you know, Israelites and how they were freed and how we go free from Egypt in every generation and each day. And so it reads totally different to me, even though I know it really well. So thank you for selecting that one.
As you were reading it, I could just feel actually my own shoulders, like, just, all right, shake it out, relax, let it go. You know, we carry that imagery that you talk about, all that tension we hold between our shoulder blades. We're always kind of hunched up. And if you just sort of breathe through it, you can sort of feel the release of those muscles. And that release feels so good. And you were talking about how it feels to finish something. You know, I remember back when I was in college, you know, I would realize with a few weeks to go in the semester, I had like 21 things I had to finish, you know, papers and tests and all the other stuff. And it was like, is that ever going to get done? And then, you know, you hand in your last thing and you're just like, ah, right. But a lot of times we don't get to hand in the last thing. The burden, you know, it would be lovely if life were like a school year and you had a semester and you could hand in your last thing and then you're just free as a bird. But many people live with the fact that the burden always remains. But what I love, what Rabbi Levy, who was my teacher and yours, whom I miss terribly, and that you bring forward is this idea that the psalmist brings up, that God doesn't take the burden away. God just shoulders it for a little while until you've rested enough to put it back and to carry it forward yourself, which is your duty and responsibility. So in thinking about how we are to play with this material, you create this structure for practice. Can you guide us through a little bit as Rabbi Rabishah is preparing for the congregation and for us to use the period of the Omer, the 49 days between Passover and the festival of Shavuot, to maybe try out a daily practice? And in your book, on pages XL and XLI, that you sort of set these directions that we should use for, you know, again, this is not a huge imposition on time. This is maybe 15 minutes that you could carve out in the morning, and it may not even need to be all 15. Can you just guide us through a little bit about what that practice looks like?
Sure. That's the part, one of the things that's really fun for me to talk about. So I'm a big fan, as many of you may be, when you have a routine, that it goes better if the stuff is all in place. So I always advise my students that get a copy of the book. I recommend the printed copy, although it is available as an ebook if that's easier. Have a notebook that you're going to use. I prefer writing with pencil. I think it goes much better for this kind of work. Have your pencils ready. I do not advise doing this kind of prayer practice, spiritual practice on the computer. Use the computer all day long in your fingers, on your thumbs. This requires this kind of routine needs different tools. I had a writing coach years ago who said, you know, always write in the same place at the same time. So I think it's important to have your stuff ready, and whether you're going to do it at the table or the desk or on the couch, like it's all just there. And that helps to set the routine for you so that you're not encumbered by any of those logistics when you're ready to actually sit down and do it.
It's like creating a little sanctuary wherever that's going to be, a place that's intentional.
Exactly. And if there's, you know, a plant that you like or a candle that you like, that's fine, but you don't need it. You can do it at your kitchen table. You can do it at your regular desk, but set the stage for it. There's a series of nigunim, melodies without words, that were written by Cantor Richard Cohn to accompany each day, and they build on each other. You can download those on the CCAR website, the page for my book. And so you can have them on your phone. They're about a minute each, and you can listen or sing along. And that just helps us settle in. And they serve as a sort of anchor. Like after a few weeks of listening to them, you actually will recognize the Psalm for Wednesday on Wednesday, and it'll sort of help keep you in that space. There's a blessing for getting started with the practice. So after you do the singing, you do the blessing. The blessing is on an unnumbered page in the book, but you can see it. It partakes of the richness of this Omer period, of counting the Omer. So the opening draws on the same formula we use when we count the Omer each day for 47 days. Hineni muchana umizumenet. Here I am. I'm prepared. I'm ready to do this thing. And then it uses some verses from Chronicles about the very early, early practice of offering psalms in the ancient temple. And then it goes on to count the day of the week. And this is a practice that I developed from the Omer counting. And then the final blessing actually comes from Chronicles as well. It's very accessible. You can do it in English. And there's a whole little chart again to help you fill in the day of the week. Then I recommend reading the psalm. I like to recommend people actually speak it out loud, read it in English. You don't need to know Hebrew to do this, but I think it helps to hear it as well as to see it. Then read the reflection for focus that's written for that particular day of the week. It can be a little complicated to try to navigate through the book. There's a chart to help you, but it basically is in 1 week segments, and then you return to week one again. And then comes the writing part. I like to set a timer for 5 minutes. You're only writing for 5 minutes. And it's whatever comes to mind, having read the reflection and the psalm. You're not judging yourself. You're not erasing. You're not editing. Just let the words flow. And then comes the counterintuitive part. People often ask me about this, that why do you sit quietly after the writing and not sit quietly first, where you could think about what you're writing? And this is because when we write first, it lets everything sort of get out. It lets it flow out a little bit. It gets the juices started. And then very often, whether in my own practice or with my students, people find that then in the sitting, and maybe you can do 5 minutes, maybe you can only sit for 1 minute, and that's fine. It just lets the ideas that you thought about marinate. It lets them percolate like coffee, whatever the metaphor is that you like. It just lets them settle a little bit. And more often than not, I'll find I have something else to write down afterward, or I come to a deeper insight about what I got started on because I allowed myself to just be still. And then the practice wraps up with three very short fill-in-the-blank sentences, an opportunity to forgive yourself for whatever it is that you judged yourself harshly on or didn't feel like you didn't do in this particular time, something from the psalm you want or the practice that you want to carry with you. I want to remember something. And then always, just like we begin with gratitude, we conclude with gratitude.
And Temple Bethel will be sending to the congregation an email each week to guide you in that week to apply that methodology to the process, the tradition of counting the Omer, of counting these 7 weeks of days leading from Passover to Shavuot. So, sometimes you say, oh, taking on a lifetime practice is a lot. You don't have to take on the whole, lifetime. Just let's try between Passover and Shavuot to see what it is. And, as you describe it, Deborah, it's not so burdensome. We're talking about like 15 minutes here.
It really is. It's 15 or 20 minutes at the very most if you do the whole thing. And you should just congratulate yourself if you do the reading. Congratulate yourself if you do the reading and the writing, or you skip the writing and you just sit. It's really a choose your own adventure. I think I would encourage you to try the whole thing. Particularly to try the kind of practice that has a little bit of singing or humming, a little bit of blessing at the beginning.
Right. Just because in the same way that like when you go to services, we don't just start, right? We give you a little bit of music because music hits the soul in a slightly different way. Sometimes people may feel a little uncomfortable. Why am I singing alone to myself on my couch? Don't worry about it. Only the dog or your cat's going to know, right? So give yourself permission to go outside your comfort zone and to see what interacting with these different words, whether it's the traditional words of the psalm or the new words and the reflections that Rabbi Robbins provides, to think about these various different themes. And there's, as you suggest, that the words of the Psalms haven't changed for centuries, but we who read them are different every day.
Yeah.
And so what jumps out at you one day may be different than what speaks to you a different day. And, as I think about the things that resonate to me, as I think about the Haggadah and the Seder, and as I think about the Psalms that are familiar, since October 7th, everything is being read differently. I'm experiencing so many things with a different lens because of the impact of the events of that day on the state of Israel that I love, on family and friends who live there, and just us as a Jewish people around the world who bear this wound that still festers. And in another part of the book, you look at the concept of rage and anger. And if you would be kind enough to share with us also your reflection for those who are going to have the book, it's going to be a Wednesday piece, which comes from Psalm 94. And this talks about what it means to think about God as a God of vengeance. And what does it do inside when we kind of feel that boiling in our blood from our own sense of resentments or angers or what sort of causes us to get into that place?
Yeah, I'm honored to read this one. It's a really interesting choice. So this one was written probably in 2021 with none of what's going on in Israel now. And certainly, you know, this week after the missile attacks on Israel, we're in a different place than we even were a week ago. And it speaks to this practice of reading the same thing over and over again. But this one was a tough one to write. It was one of the last ones in the book to be written because it was so difficult to take on this name of God and this image of God as a vengeful God. So I'm happy to share it with you and hope that it helps those who are listening to have a little bit more context and grounding as we make our way into the Seder in this particular year, the aftermath of October 7th. God of vengeances, Adonai, God of vengeances, shine forth, from Psalm 94:1. I don't like this name for God, God of vengeance. I resist reading the psalm with its repetitive, emphatic opening. Where is the Holy One I prefer? God of all creation, my rock, healer of broken hearts, giver of Torah, even judge of truth. Then I read. I realize we are multifaceted like our God. We humans are creators, rock-solid friends, healers of the sick, teachers of Torah, judges in court and on the street. We are also seekers of revenge like our God. The instinct is all too familiar. When feelings are bruised, cruel words are spoken, a heart or a trust are broken, violence overtakes the voice. We want to take revenge. We say, he hurt me. She hurt someone I love. They hurt our relationship. I'll show them. I'll do the same or worse in return. We rationalize. We justify. It's in the name of God. Suddenly, it's obvious. We have the capacity, like God, for vengeance and revenge. And we have our other God-given gifts, knowledge, compassion, integrity, patience. Amidst evil, iniquity, and inequity, we can choose in moments of rage, of desperation, and deep darkness, not an eye for an eye or a tooth for a tooth, but to judge with justice, to rise with restraint, to help with an upright heart. We can return the courts to places where their evidence is not suppressed, where the color of his skin does not prejudice a jury, where beauty does not make her at fault. Made in the image of the God of vengeance, we are empowered to reestablish courts where the judgments made by human judges shall once more approach the ideal rightness of justice. It is time to choose what is holy, to set right what is wrong, so justice will reign again.
Such a powerful poem, and I can hear the prayer for restraint that I'm feeling all of this need to lash out, and I don't want to be that person. And I think about sort of where vengeance comes from. It's this sense of not being heard, or a sense of you don't care about my suffering and I'm going to make you care, which is really at its core is about love, right? That, you know, love is when you care so deeply for someone that what happens to them happens to you. And I think oftentimes the sources of our pain or our resentment or our anger is when we feel like, hey, do you really not care? Are you so callous to what's happening to me or to people that I love and care about? Well, if you won't care, I'm going to make you care. Yeah. And that never seems to really do much.
Oh, it's so interesting the way to hear you talk about it that way, because for me, in sharing this and thinking about the psalm, it's so clearly not only personal, but it's also we're experiencing this as a Jewish people now. We're experiencing this in the world. And I think that's part of the enduring quality of the Psalms from the Bible. And perhaps, you know, to get back to the earlier question about these particular seemingly unknown, unfamiliar Psalms, like they have the capacity to be both completely intimate and personal about this Psalm is all about me. And this Psalm is all about the Jewish people and all about the people of the world. And they function on all those levels at the same time, which is why I think they have such staying power to read them every single week. Because something else is happening. We may read it more personally or more globally on any given day.
Our podcast is titled Essential Questions. And so as we conclude, Deborah, what are the big questions, the essential questions you're asking yourself as you're preparing for Seder and your own experience of the Omer?
I'm asking myself, how will I really embrace this opportunity of a new freedom at this time? What will I use that open space to do? And how will I use it to do good, not only for myself and my community, but for the Jewish people in the world? And that's what the Israelites were freed for. And it's our responsibility to take it upon ourselves. And I'm asking myself, that's probably the biggest question I'm asking myself this year as we head to the Seder.
I love that, because I think those questions of awareness and intention and being deliberate and how we use the gift of life is sort of what occupies a lot of my attention these days. The book, which we strongly encourage you to go get, is called New Each Day, A Spiritual Practice for Reading Psalms by Rabbi Deborah Robbins. It's published by the Reformed Jewish Press, by the CCAR Press. It is a wonderful book, and I strongly encourage everybody to really try that Omer practice, to carve out that 15 minutes a day, grab a notebook and a favorite pen, and give yourself the gift of allowing yourself a little bit of time each day to be intentional, to be reflective, to open yourself up to the possibility of what being part of this great dialogue between ourselves and our own day, and the words from ancient texts and the words from modern day rabbinic leaders can do to formulate your own words of prayer and your own words of intention. Rabbi Robbins, thanks so much, and we wish you Chag Sameach. We wish you a really happy Passover. The Essential Questions podcast has been made possible by the Temple Beth El Jewish Ideas Incubator, committed to creativity and innovation in modern Jewish life. Many thanks to our production team, Jason Reeser, Amanda Brentzel, and Susan Stallone. You can find this podcast on Apple Music, Spotify, and the Podbean app, as well as on Temple Bethel's website, tbeboca.org/essentialquestions. Share this podcast with your friends. Rate us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word. And we want to know, what are your essential questions? Let us know by emailing us at eq@tbeboca.org. I'm Rabbi Dan Levin, and thanks for listening to the Essential Questions podcast.